Some time ago, Admiral Rickover, the famed nuclear scientist, upon his return to this country after a tour of Russia, said this: "The secret weapon of Russia is her educational system." Now, more than ever, America needs more education and better education. Only 5 out of every 100 children in the world live in the United States. And we need to provide formal education for every American child up to the limit of his talent and his capacity to use them. Since we cannot hope to compete with the rest of the world in numbers, we must place the emphasis upon quality education. If we set ourselves to the task, we can seize this qualitative opportunity and provide the leadership for this ominous, amazing, unpredictable, and yet inviting world. Who is to undertake this huge responsibility of providing education for these architects of our future destiny? Even a state with the power of taxation cannot and should not do it all. In our nation through the years, private and public education have walked together. They complement and strengthen one another. Private or church-related schools act as a catalyst in our educational crucible. Complete state or federal control of education would pave the way for a monolithic or a totalitarian government with its suppression of intellectual freedom. This is a serious threat to a democratic society, for whose cake I eat, his song I sing. Dr. Guy Snavely, in his book, The Church and the Four-Year College, writes, "The demise of the private church-related college might well sound the death knell of the free enterprise system. Both industry and business have an interest here which should receive diligent attention. It is not a case of either or. We need both private and public education to maintain the basic structure of American life." Another relevant question which deserves an honest answer is this: why is Christian education necessary? What is the unique contribution of the church-related college? Certainly, we must offer education characterized by intellectual honesty and academic excellence. The plus lies in the attitude toward God and the significance of the spiritual in human life. Santayana, I think, expressed this purpose in moving terms when he said, "The chief end of life is a reverent attachment to the main sources of our being and the steadying of life by that attachment." For the Christian, this most certainly involves faith in God and truth as revealed in Jesus Christ, and an increasing appreciation for the sacred value of personality, of the dignity of the individual, and the worth of the common man. These fundamental objectives can be achieved in a certain atmosphere or climate. The healthiest baby cannot thrive in an environment devoid of proper food, clothing, air, exercise, and warm affection. Antagonistic and hostile surroundings would destroy the very life which we desire to nurture and strengthen. Dr. Albert Schweitzer, working as a medical missionary in the steaming jungles of Africa, has made famous the phrase, "reverence for life." The Christian college, functioning often in the more sophisticated jungles of our age, has an atmosphere which is readily recognized as a reverence for eternal values. The fundamental obsession of the Christian college is reverence for God. The Duke of Wellington once said, education without God will fill the world with clever devils. Western culture has been immeasurably enriched by the rational vision of the Greeks, the moral vision of the Jews, and the pragmatic vision of the Romans. But today there is a need for a divine synthesis, a modern theophany with God at the center, putting shattered human personality together again. The wheel of life of many has spokes but no hubs. He's God, man, having humanized God and deified himself, is a hopeless wanderer in the wastelands of futility. If God drops out of one end of the sentence, then man drops out of the other. A metaphysical base is essential to carry the heavy load of the structure of modern life. Three workmen on a construction job were asked a question. What are you doing? One answered, cutting a stone. Another replied, making $10 a day. The third said, I am building a cathedral. The Christian student graduating from a Christian college with reverence for God has this sense of divine meaning in his daily vocation. Reverence for truth in the Christian college permeates the classroom, the laboratory, the library, the chapel, and campus activities. The techniques and methodology of science are diligently utilized in the understanding of the known and the exploration of the unknown. Eager and alert minds are confronted with the reality of values and judgments which cannot be analyzed in a test tube in a laboratory. Such values as love for God, home, country, and church, and friends are seen and appreciated as having even more reality than a chair or a chemical. Education in a Christian college is motivated by a dedicated reverence for those essential moral and spiritual controls which will enable man and his culture to survive. In the very process of such education, there must be an emphasis on discipline for exacting mental tasks, no matter how relentless, disagreeable, or stubborn these tasks may be. Character has been well defined as an inner force which enables one to carry out a worthy resolution long after the mood in which that resolution was born has passed away. In a world teeming with difficult problems, an attitude of moral ambiguity or evasion will not suffice. Our predicament requires definitive moral guidance which is compatible with the modern empirical mind. Leaders today must have a moral sensitiveness, an unwavering moral conviction. Whatever security we have had or possess now in this land has been founded squarely upon these great moral and spiritual absolutes. The forces that would destroy us right now are directing their thoughts at this very bastion of American strength. Ideas involving the belief that the end justifies the means, of racial or national arrogance, or uncritical emergency action can never justify the suspension of the moral code. It is an atmosphere of reverence for humanity in a Christian college that inspiration can be found for the enlarging of the perimeter of human sympathy and social obligation. One graduate of such an institution with an earned doctor's degree turned down a handsome salary with a business concern in order to devote his talents to service of humanity. Said he, I am not just interested in making a living, I am interested in living a life. After the American Revolution, the ablest brains and most influential men in America, such as Washington, Franklin, Jefferson, Hamilton, Madison, and Marshall, without hesitation laid aside matters of individual profit to serve a larger cause, the building of a great nation. Today, our national future will be in dire peril if the cultured one are the unconcerned ones, and the gifted are dedicated only to their personal ends. These are some of the great tasks of a Christian college in the light of our modern situation.
Thank you, Dr. Quilly. I now recognize Brother Owen Cooper of Mississippi.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. May I be considered as presenting a layman's viewpoint and not essentially the layman's viewpoint as to the role of the Christian college in today's world? Now let's take a glance at today's world. A Christian layman views the conditions of the world today with grievous concern. On every hand, there is evidence of lowering ethics, deteriorating morals, increased lawlessness, degeneration in the home, and contempt for basic honesty. Businessmen in high places apparently totally regard ethics in their mad desire for gain. They conspire together in rigging prices. They pour forth on an unsuspecting public obscene literature, and they profit from degrading entertainment. Some would have all American men and women become addicted to tobacco and alcohol beverages. There appears a total disregard for Christian ethics in a mad quest for money. Every discernible statistic indicates the lowering of moral standards. From a couple in Lover's Lane to a mass assembly of college students on a public beach, there appears a growing contempt for the moral laws of God and man. The glorification of sex in movies, on TV, and on the stage, and in literature indicates a sensuality more reminiscent of ancient pagan Rome than modern Christian America. An increasing crime rate, growing juvenile delinquency, the ever-growing sinister influence of underworld organized crime, and the open disregard for law observance indicates an appalling lack of respect for law and authority. The deterioration of the home, the lack of parental responsibility, the absence of the exercise of parental authority, the alarming divorce rate indicates the Christian home is losing its hold and its influence. Apparently, honesty is no longer considered the best policy. It is apparently acceptable to cheat one's way through the educational system. It is a recognized business practice to cut corners, regulate prices, and utilize questionable means to make more money for stockholders. It is an acknowledged labor practice to promote feather bedding, to regulate work rules, and create unnecessary overtime. Cheating on income tax returns, accepting or giving payola, is not only generally accepted, but in many sectors considered smart. The Christian layman views today's world with a degree of concern and wonders if Christianity is even holding its own, let alone making progress necessary to offset the tremendous strides of an atheistic, anti-Christian, materialistic, communistic ideology. What is the answer to the problem of today's world? The Christian layman believes it is the propagation, the acceptance, and the practice of Christianity. The greatest single factor in the propagation, the acceptance, and the practice of Christianity is the Christian college. It is from the Christian college that comes our preachers, our missionaries, and other leaders in church-related vocations. It is from our Christian college that should come a host of dedicated Christian laymen and laywomen who are likewise dedicated to the propagation, the acceptance, and the practice of the gospel. Christian leadership largely comes from our Christian colleges, not all of it, but most of it. No movement can rise above its leadership. No sound organization can progress faster than the pace of its leadership, and no group will give, work, or sacrifice more than its leader.
The Christian college must provide the dedicated Christian leadership needed in these critical times. If the Christian college is to meet this tremendous opportunity, if it is to accept this tremendous responsibility, and if it is to fulfill its ultimate destiny, there are some characteristics which will mark it from other educational institutions. First of all, the Christian college, or at least the Baptist Christian college, should be distinctly Christian. If a Baptist Christian college is simply another educational institution doing an identical job with a state university or a private non-sectarian endowed institution, its existence cannot be justified. When Aquila and Priscilla took unto themselves Apollos and expounded the way of God more perfectly, Christian education perhaps had its beginning. The pupil Apollos was to be given something distinctive by way of expounding the way of God more perfectly. The Christian college is neither Christian nor needed if it does not expound the way of God. If Christ is the way, the truth, and the life, the real reason for a Christian college is to teach, to exhort, to instruct, and to instill this great truth in the lives of its students. A layman views with great grave concern the efforts of a Christian college to conform to questionable social practices for the sake of either pleasing students, attracting students, or escape being branded as out of date. Compromise. Compromise and worldliness has no accepted place on a Christian college campus. The college, like an individual, should seek to walk worthy in its vocation and to abstain from that which causes a brother to stumble. In the second place, the Christian college should be doctrinally sound. There is no place for aimlessness or lack of direction on our Baptist Christian colleges. They should not be weather vanes pointing whithersoever doctrinal winds may blow, but they should be compasses always pointing in the same direction, and that toward the bright and morning star. The doctrinal voice of the Christian college should be clear and unmistakable. For if the trumpet gives an uncertain sound, who shall prepare himself for the battle? The goal should not be to see how far the students may be led from the basic and fundamental beliefs and yet retain some degree of biblical foundation, but the goal should be how nearly the students can be led toward the landmark of the faith. There is no place on a Baptist Christian college for doctrinal brinksmanship. The Christian college should exhibit an uncompromising doctrinal stability and should not remove the ancient landmarks which thy fathers have set. The Christian college should be established upon a solid foundation of God's truth and should so remain. Its products will then find themselves grounded on a solid foundation of truth. The guise of academic freedom should not be abused as a means of attacking fundamental Christian beliefs or attacking doctrinal practices. It is better that a millstone be hanged about your neck and you be cast in the sea than to cause a child in faith to stumble. Baptist colleges should strengthen, not weaken, faith. In the third place, the Christian college and its faculty should be denominationally loyal. Admittedly, there will be a difference in Christian interpretation, in doctrine, in faith, and practice of a college sponsored by Southern Baptists as contrasted to a college supported by some other denomination of differing beliefs. The other denomination has a perfect right to support its schools and teach its faith and practices. Likewise, Southern Baptists have a perfect right to support institutions which teach their faith and practice. No person has a right under the cloak of academic freedom to use a position on a Southern Baptist college campus to attack the denomination, to plant seeds of distrust in the minds of pupils regarding the denominational program, to undermine faith in the denomination's doctrine, or to belittle the efforts of the denomination. would scarcely tolerate a business associate who would use his position in a company to attack the company, to undermine the principles upon which it was established, and to seek to destroy that which has been built up by the company through the years. Helpful criticism, yes. Destructive opposition, no. Likewise, our denominational institution should back the denomination with loyalty as an institution and should expect and demand the same degree of loyalty from those associated with the institution. In the fourth place, the Christian College must put its main emphasis in working with the specialized tools at hand and not attempt to compete across the board with state institutions. The specialized tool of the Christian College are the Bible and Christian morality. That is the field in which Christian colleges should major. It should major on quality education as contrasted to quantity education. The layman is concerned about an uneducated heart and a trained mind in a trigger-happy world. Laymen are increasingly interested in Christian colleges because they see in them the hope of raising our ethical standards, improving our morals, reducing lawlessness, strengthening the home, and returning to a Christian concept of basic honesty. Laymen will translate these interests in Christian colleges to financial support if Christian colleges are doing the job and the layman is properly approached. 8 years ago, business and industry was giving $40 million a year to higher education. Today, that has reached $200 million, but the current need is $500 million. Here is a statement taken from a recent bulletin published by A.N. Markowitz Company. Quote, the leaders, thinkers, and builders are coming today from the small colleges of the country, all out of proportion to the enrollment in these institutions. That is known and recognized by business. Southern Baptists need, yea, the world needs something changeless in this changing world. They need something bright in this time of darkness. They need something true in this time of error. They need something quiet in this age of disturbance. They need something righteous in this time of sin and something solid in a quagmire of doubt. Christian laymen with hope, expectancy, look to our Christian colleges for the changeless, the light, the truth, and the righteous.
Thank you, Brother Cooper. We come now to the consideration of the Committee on Resolutions. All of us are well aware of the fact of the great work that's done by the committees of this convention and the superb way that they have brought to us from time to time matters of great importance to all of us. They've been able to say for us what we'd like to say, and they've said it in a wonderful way. I recognize now the chairman. No. I recognize now Dr. Grady Corson for the committee.
I strongly suspect from your reaction that you'd like to resolve on this last speech we've heard. And I join you in that. I call your attention to the fact that the major portion of the report of the Committee on Resolutions was presented to the convention yesterday and is contained in today's bulletin. We bring the final phase of our report in this resolution of appreciation to the host city. The Southern Baptist Convention, at its 104th session, wishes to express appreciation to the citizens of St. Louis for their Christian hospitality. We gratefully express our appreciation to the local committees for many courtesies, services, and accommodations. To the press, radio, and television for fair and effective publicity. We commend the hotels, motels, public transportation, and taxicab personnel for their courteous accommodations. We gratefully acknowledge the gracious hospitality of many St. Louis families in housing convention messengers. We wish to express our thanks to the police department of the city for their many acts of assistance and courtesy. We wish to thank the auditorium personnel for their effective handling of our convention. The combined efforts of the local committee and the people of St. Louis have contributed materially to our comfort and to an effective convention. We, by this resolution, give voice to our gratitude. Mr. President, I move the adoption of the report.
Motion been made and seconded that the report of the Committee on Resolutions be adopted in expression of our appreciation, thanks, and gratitude to all of those who worked so faithfully to make this indeed an outstanding convention. If you favor the adoption of this resolution, would you let it be known by standing? Thank you very much. We come now to consideration of miscellaneous business. The President, Dr. Pollard.
Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to present to you at this time Mr. C. Stanton Gallup, who is the president of the American Baptist Convention. He is a great layman, and we're honored today to have him in our midst, and I want him to come now and speak a word of greeting to all of us. May I say, as he comes now to the platform, that American Baptists and Southern Baptists and all other Baptist people love each other, and we're cooperating together, and we thank God for them, and we pray for them and love them continually. Let us stand as the beloved president of the American Baptist Convention speaks to us for just a moment. Mr. Gallup.
Yes. God bless you.
Pollard, officers, messengers of the Southern Baptist Convention, I greet you in the name of Jesus Christ and bring you the warm greetings of the American Baptist Convention. I arrived late last evening, and as I stepped off the elevator this morning on my way to breakfast, I was greeted by my friend, Dr. Ballantyne, and he in turn introduced me to your General Secretary, Dr. Porter Ruth, whom I had come to know as we had served together on the Baptist Joint Committee on Public Affairs. He, in turn, introduced me to your newly elected president, Dr. Herschel Hobbs. I'm looking forward to this same privilege of introducing him to our convention when we meet at Portland, Oregon, next month. I tell you this because I had not been in this city but a few moments before I felt the warmth and the reality of your fine fellowship. The fellowship is real, too, because Dr. Ruth then introduced me to a layman, Owen Cooper, who paid for my breakfast. This year has certainly been a great experience for me, a layman, as I have felt the real bond of Christian fellowship that through our Baptist World Alliance that reaches round the world, we experience again and again this real bond of Christian understanding and fellowship. I would report to you the enthusiasm of our churches as we work together in this second year of the Baptist Jubilee Advance. Truly, this is a new day for us as we begin to find ways in which we can give a united witness to the world in which we live. My favorite verse, 1 Peter 5:7, casting all your care upon him, for he careth for you. It is certainly wonderful to share in the spirit and the fellowship of your great convention. And may God richly bless you as we witness to his love in the living of our daily lives. May God bless you.
Thank you, Brother Gallup, and our greetings to your convention. I recognize now Dr. Porter Ruth.
Mr. Chairman, I know that all of us have been blessed this week by having all of the former presidents of the convention present, with one exception. I should like to ask unanimous consent, Mr. Chairman, that the secretary of this convention be asked to send a word of greeting to
Mr. Brooks Hayes, who was unable to come because of the international situation, and also to Dr. Sarin, the president of the Baptist World Alliance, who was unable to come because of a recent operation. I should like to ask unanimous consent that this be done. That's the only way that it can be done.
Thank you, Dr. Ruth. And there is unanimous consent. I know it gives us great joy to send these messages to these wonderful servants of God. I recognize now Dr. Peterson.
Dr. Slaughter, I come with a similar matter to that presented to you by Dr. Ruth. I had a visit with Dr. T.L. Holcomb. I might have been absent, although I've tried to attend all the sessions, when some message might have been sent to him. I had a visit with him just before leaving Dallas. You know, he lost his beloved companion not long ago. And also, I had a visit 12 days ago with Dr. Madre, C.E. Madre. He was celebrating his 85th birthday. These men become lonely in their older days. I would like, if it may be proper, that the convention send messages to these two valiant denominational servants of other days. I make that as a motion.
You hear a second to the motion? Motion made and seconded. Any discussion? You favor sending these messages, let it be known, saying aye. Opposed by saying no. Unanimous. Messages will be sent. I recognize now
Ray McCollum.
Brother Ray McCollum of Oklahoma. No, from California, beg your pardon.
Mr. President, I should like to move that the secretaries of the convention be requested to include in the directory section of the annual the officers of the Southern Baptist Pastors Conference.
You hear the motion? Is there a second? Motion made and seconded that the officers of the Pastors Conference be included in the minutes. Any discussion? You favor adopting it, let it be known, saying aye. Opposed, the contrary sign. It is carried. I recognize now Brother Byrd of Tennessee.
Mr. President, Layman Owen Cooper has well expressed the sentiments of this convention concerning our colleges and seminaries. Recognizing that many of our fine institutional heads are not present because of commencement season, I would like to ask the common consent of the convention that this address be distributed to all of the heads of our Baptist colleges and universities and seminaries.
You hear Dr. Byrd's request of common consent that this excellent message be sent to the leaders of our institution of learning. Is there any objection? No objection? It will be sent. I recognize now Dr. Merritt, our secretary.
Brother President, I move that the reading of the convention minutes be omitted and that the proceedings as published in the convention bulletin be approved as the record, with authority for any necessary clerical adjustment to be made by the secretary. This is a motion that is made at practically every session, Brother President. I move that this be adopted.
You hear the motion and seconded. Any discussion? You favor adopting it, let the norm saying aye. Opposed are saying no. Ayes have it. It is adopted. Is there further miscellaneous business?
Mr. President.
Brother.
Wanted to be sure that you heard me here.
I don't see you. What's your name?
I'm Clarence Morris from Atlanta, Georgia. One of the basic concepts or principles of our worship, I believe, in the Baptist Church is that of reverence. And this is in no way speaking critical of those who are on the platform, because you are unaware of what's going on out here, because I know your ears are not that sensitive to the noise. And of course, I realize that when you got 12,000 people together, that it's hard to keep them quiet. But we have seen other conventions in the past that had a spirit, a definite spirit of reverence about it. And so that's the reason for my approaching this mic and this convention and consuming these moments of time. I know the importance of and the value of fellowship in our conventions, and I'm for it 100%. Fellowship should not be had at moments that result in discourtesies and unchristlikeness on the part of any delegate to the speaker who is on the platform. A noisy atmosphere can be anticipated among the juvenile, but not among adult men and women reaching out for Christian maturity and Christ-like example, especially among so many of God's pastors who must set the pattern. What will help? My suggestion is that our editors of our local, of our Baptist state papers see if they can help us, and that the emphases be placed in our state convention meetings. I believe that it's the height of irreverence to walk out of a convention during the time of prayer, reading of the Word of God, or when one of God's men are speaking to our hearts, unless it's an absolute necessity. Now, if a mother leaves the building with a little child, we can understand it. But when an adult leaves out, it's hard for us to understand. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir. This is a very timely suggestion. Finds a very responsive note in all of our hearts, for we would love most of all that we should remain in an atmosphere of worship and reverence throughout the convention. However, we must remember it is a convention and not a service of worship in the sanctuary. But I'm perfectly sure that we can improve in this area and improve tremendously. I thank you very much, sir, for your suggestion, and I trust that the editors of our papers will pick it up and do what they can to stimulate a further interest in the atmosphere of quietness and reverence in the presence of God. Further miscellaneous business. We come now to the consideration of the American Baptist Theological Seminary Commission, and I recognize Dr. Sedberry, the Executive Secretary.
Mr. President, the report of the American Seminary is found on page 130 of the Book of Reports. There are no recommendations, therefore I move its adoption.
You hear the motion to adopt the report. Is there a second? Motion been made and seconded that this report printed in the Book of Reports be adopted. Any discussion? If you favor adopting it, let the norm saying aye. Opposed, the contrary sign is saying no. I recognize now Dr. Sidney.
I just have three things to say. One is that this is my final report as Executive Secretary of the Commission on the American Seminary. My time of retirement is set for December the 31st of this calendar year. I've served in this capacity since 1949. I've seen the seminary grow a great deal, but not as much as it could have grown if we had had more money to operate on. The second thing is, the seminary has had a good year. It has had a good enrollment, and as a good graduating class, is in the best condition academically and financially for many years. Every account of the seminary has been paid up to date. It has no debt at all. The third thing I want to say is that Dr. M.P. Turner, president of the seminary, has reorganized its curriculum and is leading the seminary in a wonderful way. I'm going to present him now for a statement from him after which he will present the students for a song.
Dr. Turner.
Dr. M.D. Turner.
Thank you, Dr. Sedberg. I could multiply words extensively, but regardless of how long I would talk, I would never be able to emphasize more the fact that I am deeply grateful to you and that I am expressing the sincere gratitude of the entire American Baptist Theological Seminary family for your kindness, for your interest, and for the continued support that you have given to our work there at Nashville. I realize that our time is limited, and I should rather that you would hear a group of singers that we have brought from the campus, and we present them to you at this time.
consideration of the Carver School of Missions and Social Work, Dr. Nathan C. Brooks, President, who will bring us the report. I recognize Dr. Brooks.
The report of the Carver School of Missions and Social Work is to be found on page 108 in the Convention Book of Reports. There are no recommendations. I move the adoption of this report.
Is there a second to this motion? Motion been made and seconded that the report be adopted. If you favor, let no one say aye. Opposed, say no. The ayes have it. The report is adopted. I recognize Dr. Brooks.
The Carver School of Missions and Social Work, as most of you know, was named for Dr. W.O. Carver, who for more than 50 years taught missions in Louisville. The Carver School is not a seminary. It is a graduate school. It is moving in the direction of professional graduate accreditation. It is coeducational. It is seeking to render a distinctive service to Southern Baptists. And yet many of you have little idea about the particular type of program or curriculum that is to be found at Carver School. And so this morning, we're presenting to you the members of the faculty at Carver School, and we're asking these to tell you something of what they do and what they teach. I present, first of all, Miss Norma Baker.
I teach missionary education. It is our aim to make education for missions a vital part of all the church does. Starting with the missionary message of the Bible, we study contemporary writers in the field of Christian education and examine current materials and methods which may be employed in all the organizations of the local church. There is also a thrill in working with alumni affairs in this school, which has former students scattered throughout all the countries in which our Foreign Mission Board works. According to the latest missionary album, Carver School ranks second among all schools in the total number of former students currently serving under appointment.
Miss Catherine Biggs.
Professional social work skills are often needed to meet the problems of the troubled juvenile delinquent, the distressed fatherless child, the severely physically handicapped, the confused unmarried mother, and the forsaken senior citizen. Carver School social work graduates of recent years have taken places of significant responsibility in Southern Baptist Children's Homes, Goodwill Centers, missions, hospitals, and on home and foreign fields. These social work students have studied social welfare, group work, social casework. These courses are focused on our specialized ministry. The casework courses help the student develop skill in the individual approach to the complicated and often baffling problems of social needs. Our program of field instruction provides opportunity to apply in practice the teachings of the classroom. Intensive supervision helps the student develop professional skills.
Dr. Hugh A. Brim.
From among the courses which I teach, I will mention four. Cultural anthropology is a study of the total way of life of a people. It examines their customs relating to religion, to the social structure of the family, to kinship behavior, systems of authority, and methods of social control within the group. Second, the church and social work. This is a course which analyzes the beginnings of modern social work practice as they unfold in both the Old and the New Testament and are ultimately given expression in the expansion of Christian history. Alcohol studies give special emphasis to Christian responsibility in helping the alcoholic. Race and ethnic relations is a course that probes into the dynamics of prejudice and seeks for Christian answers to racial tension. These and other courses are all designed to meet the special needs of the missionary and of the Christian social worker.
Miss Virginia Burke.
Introduction to social work equips the student with knowledge and with skills which improve his understanding of the problems of individuals and of groups. He is given an increased awareness of the mental, emotional, and spiritual problems created by the ills of society. The student gains a sensitive understanding and a Christian motivation to meet these needs through social group work methods practiced within the Christian concept. He would be equipped to help the neglected individual to grow in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man.
Mr. George Carver, all of our master's degree candidates take my course in the Christian Church and its world mission. Here we review the record of Christianity and Christian missionary expansion through the centuries. We point up the urgency of the unfinished task of missions in our day. For our missions majors, I give the philosophy of missions. This course examines the biblical basis of missions, surveys principles of a Christian approach to the widespread non-Christian religions, and outlines effective techniques for proclaiming the Christian gospel in our contemporary world. In the course called World Revolutionary Forces, we study in some detail the political, social, economic, and religious revolutions of this century. A missionary needs specific knowledge of the pressing hungers of body, mind, and spirit felt by tens of millions in our world today. We pray that our graduates go out with a clear understanding of the Christian gospel as a truly revolutionary faith. They must present the whole gospel to the whole man in the whole world.
Dr. J. Herbert Gilmore. The fundamental struggle of our time centers around different and divergent concepts of man. For this reason, I offer a course in philosophical anthropology in which we study these various concepts and subject them to a Christian analysis. Moreover, the political and social systems of our time, which affect us mightily, are studied in a course on contemporary social systems. I also give a course in Christian evangelism, which is designed for the person who is not to be a pastor, but rather one who is to serve as a layperson in our churches. We at Carver are concerned that our graduates be effective servants in our denomination. And so for this reason, I offer a course in the Southern Baptist program so that our students may understand its structure, its purpose, and its goals.
This past year, for the second time, Dr. John Allen Moore has served as visiting professor of missions. Next year, Dr. Tucker Calloway from Japan is to be the visiting professor of missions. Dr. John Allen Moore.
I count it a real privilege to have been visiting professor of missions at Carver School during these two furlough periods. My permanent assignment is on the faculty of the Baptist Seminary in Ruchlikon, Zurich, Switzerland. I was appointed a missionary to the Foreign Mission Board to Yugoslavia in 1938. My wife and I visit fellow believers in Yugoslavia when we can get visas, also in other fields as opportunity offers. My teaching at Carver School has to do in large part with area studies in that part of the world where I have lived and worked. For Carver School seeks more and more to offer specialized courses of training in missions as in social work. I believe in Carver School with all my heart and rejoice in the opportunity of having a part in its work.
Miss Mildred Thomas.
As registrar, I am happy to report that more than three times as many applications have been received as were received at this time last year. These include women and an increasing number of men from New Hampshire to California and from Nigeria to Hong Kong. In addition to registrar, it is my privilege to serve as the organist for the school.
We do not have present this morning our librarian, Mrs. John Elkin, nor Dr. Robert O. Lefty, who is joining us on June 2nd
in the field of linguistics and literacy and language training. I present to you now Mr. Michael Speer, who is Director of Administration.
As Director of Administration, I work with the administrative staff. This includes working with the administrative assistant, financial secretary, and our house director. Those of us on the staff make every effort to keep the wheels of organization oiled. We realize that this oiling has been inadequate whenever we hear any of the students or any of our faculty members squeaking.
Thank you, Dr. Brooks and members of the faculty. Our singing is an offering of praise to our God. Wouldn't you like to make him a good offering of praise by singing the great gospel song? Our director will come. We will stand and sing.
Thank you. May we sing together the first and the last stanzas of the gospel song, He Lives. I serve a risen Savior. He's in the world today. You know the words. Would you stand and we'll sing together? My hands come down, we sing softly. And then toward the end, let's sing it with a great dramatic ending. And those of you who sing the part, sing a harmony part. And those of you who sing sopranos real high, give us a high D flat at the end. Won't you? All right, the last stanza, rejoice. Rejoice, O Christian. Lift up your voice and sing eternal hallelujahs to Jesus Christ, our King. May we sing it. Rejoice.
Divine. We come now to hear the report of the Committee on Canadian Baptist Cooperation. I recognize Dr. Court Ritz, Chairman of the Committee.
Later. You'll find a copy of this report, pages 162, 163 of your book of reports. And I'm not going to lead it, but I am, with your consent, going to give you a resume of this report. You understand, Southern Baptist Convention has this committee on Canadian Baptist cooperation. You understand also that the Canadian Baptists, through their various Baptist groups there, have committees or representation on the Canadian committee, and that we meet jointly with them from time to time, counsel together concerning the advancement of the work Baptist in Canada and concerning relations between Southern Baptists and Canadian Baptists. This joint committee met this last year at St. John, New Brunswick. Most of our members from Southern Baptist Convention were there over Sunday, had the privilege of preaching in some of those Canadian churches on Sunday, and I'm sure that I speak for all of our committee members when I say that we greatly enjoyed the fellowship, this opportunity of preaching in their church. Now, what's represented at that particular meeting, Baptist Federation of Canada, Baptist Union of Western Canada, Baptist General Convention of Oregon and Washington, the Maritime Baptist Convention, the Southern Baptist Convention, Dr. Zeman of the Ontario Quebec Convention, who had planned to be with us, suffered a fatal heart attack just a few days before the meeting, and therefore the Ontario Quebec Convention was not represented, but they are usually represented in these meetings. The report shows that there's been a considerable exchange of leadership among the conventions, especially in the field of evangelism. We had Reverend F.C. Finity, pastor of the First Baptist Church of St. John, as a speaker at the Home Mission Week at Ridgecrest last summer. Professors from Southeastern Baptist Seminary and Southern Baptist Seminaries have spoken at the McMaster Divinity School in recent months. A number of our finest pastors have participated in simultaneous revival Sunday school clinics in Canada during the past year. Most of the members of this committee, as I stated a moment ago, spoke in those churches while we were there. As you know, Brother Fred Fulham was the speaker at our first session of this convention, representing fraternal messengers to this convention. At the request of Canadian leaders, Dr. Reed of the Annuity Board, the Southern Baptist Convention, conferred with them relative to a proposed annuity plan which they hope to establish for their pastors. They report progress being made in perfecting such a plan. Ministries of this kind, Southern Baptists and Rendiful, Canadian Baptists, that will be of great benefit to them. The Home Mission Board of Southern Baptist Convention assisted in construction of a church building in Stephenville near Air Force Base, where there are thousands of our own boys in service. We are indebted to Canadian Baptists for the ministry that they have rendered to our service personnel who are stationed there and at other bases in Canada. With the help of members of the evangelistic staff of the Home Mission Board and a number of outstanding pastors from our Southern Baptist churches, several evangelistic crusades have been conducted in various areas of Canada. It appears that the spirit of evangelism